All right, are we ready for Touche? I think we're ready.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche. You go right, you go right,
you go left, you go right. That's right, it's Touche here on The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman, and with me, Charles Lipson, the political science professor from University of Chicago, also his blog, you can find it, zipdialogue.com. He is in studio waiting on Tracy Seffel, who's having some transportation issues. She'll be here shortly. How you doing, Charles? Good to see you.
It's a pleasure to see you.
So you, I mean, obviously, you know, Dave and Chris are usually in at this time. They've got the week off because next week is a big our big debate special, which is going to be huge programming.
Here. Huge.
For you, I mean, obviously, let's get right into it. This weekend, we saw a lot of sort of a strange politicizing of terrorism. We saw with what happened yesterday in New York and New Jersey, what's happening today, the words that are being used, the stature in which it's being used, the emotions that are attached to it. It quickly went from all hands on deck to pointing fingers. How does this play out in the election, an issue like terrorism?
I think that the issue of terrorism is largely an issue of whether people feel safe. And so I think that people who think of it mostly as a foreign policy issue are missing the point. When you have some doubts about going to the mall, when you are walking down the street in Chelsea, mm-hmm. a place that I've been many times, and at any moment something could go off, then I think law and order, if it's not perceived as just draconian and fascist, always has an appeal. When Hillary first learned about this, she issued an absolutely tepid statement. And then presumably after her counselors and focus groups told her, mm-hmm. you know, gee, be a little harder, she feigned some emotion.
But some may say that was more leader-like in the way that she sort of said, we don't have all the facts, this is what we're going to do, we should, you know.
She's not the leader. She's running to be the leader. President Obama today wouldn't call what happened in New York and New Jersey terrorism. He called what happened in Minnesota being investigated as possible terrorism. I just find that appalling.
Why do you think that is? I mean, is there, you believe that there's political purpose to the fact that they don't call it terrorism?
I believe that they do have a political purpose, and I think that they think that it would just rile people up more and that it would alienate the Muslim community. But they basically explained their purpose this morning when Josh Earnest went on one of the morning talk shows and said, this is a war of narratives. Well, it's partly a war of narratives, but it's also a real war.
Right. Charles Lipson in studio with us here on Touche, filling in for Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. Also joining us tonight, Tracy Seffel. She's a former Clinton campaigner. How are you? Good to see you.
I'm good. Hi,
good
Justin.
Good to see you. How are you? I set up your I just said transportation difficulties on the way to get here. We started the first topic out the gate, which Professor Lipson just mentioned, was just about the idea of politicizing terror. In terrorism,
sure.
What happened in New York and New Jersey. You know, obviously this weekend we saw two different approaches to this. We continue to see it being politicized at the highest levels, and now we got to the point where we're pointing fingers at both sides for lack of leadership. How do you see this playing out, and is this something that, you know, it should be part of the sort of campaign rhetoric as we get closer to the election?
Well, certainly we should be talking about our response to terrorism, and we should be thinking about what it is we would want from our next president. But that's very different than the sort of technicolor, rhetorical hyperbole that Trump is so fond of. So he has been, you know, in the course of these past few days, New Jersey and New York, he's just been saying whatever comes to mind as he does, making assertions without factual backup as he does.
The attack on him was that he called what happened in New York a bombing, and I believe he called it that only after other people had said a bomb went off, including maybe Cuomo or de Blasio. So I didn't quite get how that was over the top. He has a lot of over the top rhetoric.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong.
But I know what you're talking about, his initial response when he was taking the stage in Colorado Springs. What I'm also talking about is when he starts saying things like, well, our law enforcement can't go after terrorists because of profiling. And you know, he starts making these assertions. He takes it too far. And so I, as a voter, want that conversation, but I, as a thinking person, would prefer that it is done in factual ways.
Yeah,
and that's Hillary's forte.
I feel like you get to a point where you're seeing this connection today, even the stuff he was talking about, where he's like, you know, we want people to come to this country, love this country. What's it like? We need to have better things in place to make sure that we root people out. I mean, there's always this jump to policy standards as opposed to what you even mentioned, Professor, which is about law and order. Mm-hmm. If he keeps it on law and order, I feel like he's got a better shot than sort of making it a bigger thing and getting into immigration, getting into other topics that it mm-hmm. gets a little bit more gray.
I think what Tracy is saying actually makes a lot of sense. And I think that people think that Hillary and even more President Obama engage in threat under inflation, and Trump engages in threat inflation, mm-hmm. and neither seems quite right. I think that there's an additional issue besides law and order and accurately assessing the threat, and that's whether the candidate seems to understand the kind of fury and anxiety mm-hmm. that the country has. I think that's a strength of Trump's. I think it's a weakness of both the president and Hillary.
But I would also push back a little bit, because I think that mm-hmm. you may see Obama fans and people who, you know, represent mm-hmm. probably pretty much half the country at this point. It's like Democrats and Republicans don't have that necessary anxiety that is sort of, you know, taking the headlines, this idea that we're not a safe country. Because, and in fact, I mean, as you look around the world is changing. There's a lot that's going on. The United States still seems to be a safe country.
Mm. It's a great construction of this inflation versus overinflation and underinflation and everything in between, as it relates to candidates.
It's a Tom Brady framing, you know.
I don't speak football. I apologize.
I see. I'm sorry. Neither do the Bears.
something Cubs, and then I'm all for it. But in any case, I do think that it is a key question as to how well these candidates not only understand voter anxieties, but how they can translate that as candidates. And I don't question Hillary's understanding of voter anxieties. I do think that she is working to find the best way to express it.
You know, the old joke about Hollywood is that the key to making it is sincerity. And once you've learned to fake that, you got it made.
You don't buy the sincerity coming out of the Clinton camp, I assume.
Well, I think the basic story about Hillary is that she's really a policy wonk. And
horror.
No. I think that there hasn't been a candidate who liked campaigning less since Richard Nixon. You could just tell. These are not people who really like it. Whereas my sense is that President Obama loves campaigning. Donald Trump loves campaigning. Somebody's got to tell him you'll actually have to govern. You know, I mean, it doesn't end with the campaign.
That's what Trump wakes up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. And before he tweets something obnoxious, he thinks to himself, oh, my God, I would actually have to do the job. Hillary wakes up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat and says, oh, my God, I'm running against Donald Trump.
Yeah. How can I be in a race with this guy?
Tracy Seffel, Charles Lipson in studio. We're playing Touche tonight, filling in for Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
You go right, you go left, you go left, you go right, you go right, you go right, you go left.
It's Touche here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, in for Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling tonight. Charles Lipson and Tracy Seffel. Tracy, a political consultant. Charles, a professor of political science at the University of Chicago. as well. You can find his stuff at zipdialogue.com. All right, so let's get to a big announcement today. Hillary Clinton really sort of pressing the flesh for millennials. This is an area that seemed to be in Bernie Sanders' camp, and Hillary Clinton is making a pitch for younger voters. Does she have what it takes to do that? Is there a sway possibility in bringing those young voters to her and not to possibly a third party?
Well, you know that it is my hope that that is the case. And it's a little bit nerve-wracking to watch this happen because it is so important to turn out that vote. Today, I thought she had one of her better performances. And part of that was her delivery. It was very conversational and personal. And I think that's when she's absolutely at her best. This idea, however, that she has to win over millennials is it's tricky in a way, because what is she? How do I say this? I reject the idea that an entire demographic can be boiled down that. And
welcome to politics.
Welcome to politics, right? But I truly do. And I think all of this conversation, you know, some people say it just boils down to college debt, that that's really the key issue for millennials. I don't know that that's true. Maybe it's reproductive rights. Maybe it's economic security in other fashions. So I think it's tricky for us to shorthand it, but I think she did a really admirable job today at Temple University.
And I would say getting a job when you leave college. So if I were Trump, when I would respond to that with an economic to her kind of social and educational. But the issue with millennials is always, will they actually vote? Not just
Correct.
Who are they voting
Correct.
For, but will they turn out in large numbers? It's kind of people who are above 40 who start really turning out in large numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously what in 2008 with Obama, even 1992 with mm-hmm. Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. you saw millennial or younger voters, first-time voters vote in mass, but there were some elections in between that they didn't.
Exactly.
Al Gore, John Kerry, those kind of things.
In Chicago, there's really interesting efforts around that. For example, with younger women, there's a huge early vote brunch that's happening in a few weeks. And I think something like 1,500 women have signed up to go. And, you know, stuff like that is sort of the alternative to go stand in line at your polling place. And I think that's what we need to capitalize on. Early vote, other modes of getting it done.
Couple of issues. And Hillary definitely has an advantage on early vote because she's well organized and the Trump campaign is not. Couple of points here. One is, we don't have an election day anymore. We have an election season.
It's because been 17 years long.
A third of the electorate votes early. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that the enthusiasm, at least for Hillary, maybe you see it a lot more, but I see a lot of enthusiasm among older women, but I don't see a lot of enthusiasm among younger women. And I think most of the enthusiasm in the race, at least in an educated population, is I really hate the other one.
Yeah, right. Mm. I hear that all the time.
Absolutely. And I also wonder, have we maybe passed the era of being enthusiastic about our president? Maybe that's no longer what matters, that it's what are you going to do for me and how are you going to make things better for me and my family?
Well, that's true for
go ahead. No.
I think that's true for virtually all of our institutions. There has been a 30 to 40 year drop. It's been steady. It began right after Watergate, and virtually all of our institutions, with the exception of the military, are now much lower levels of trust than they used to be. You look at how the percentage in the early to mid 70s, how many people trusted the government? It was up in the mid 70s.
So what's it going to take to get trust on these candidates? I mean, we're seeing, you know, both sides have issues with trust, and obviously the, you know, the tax returns mm-hmm. play along that. Mm-hmm. That's the Donald Trump won't reveal his tax returns. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what he's in. Hillary Clinton's been dodging the trust issue for a while. What's it going to take for us to trust these candidates to say that we buy back into the American system.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly think that the first debate is going to be a pivotal moment in this campaign, in our psyche collectively. I think that that opportunity to see these two people on stage, as surreal as it may be and as impossible as it is in Hillary's case to actually prepare. I mean, who knows what he's going to do? He could be, you know, he could do a magician thing, sawing a woman in half in a box or something. I mean, I truly do not know what he will do on that debate stage. I do know that it will be an extraordinarily huge audience, and that is an opportunity to demonstrate these kinds of qualities.
Charles?
I absolutely agree with that. In fact, I just heard an interview with Donald Trump in which he was asked, what are you going to do? And he didn't say, as he sometimes says, oh, you know, I'm not going to reveal my strategy. He literally said, I don't know what I'm going to do. It'll depend, he said, on whether she shows me respect. Now, that's interesting. I almost heard, it depends upon whether I get the actual respect that I deserve. But, you know, there's an interesting question there. I do think that both candidates have been sort of playing a fair amount of hide the ball. She points to his taxes. He says you won't release your speeches to Goldman Sachs. There's the filings for the Clinton Foundation have not really been audited and all the rest. So there's a lot on both sides. But I think there's a huge amount of mistrust. I mean, we've never seen a race where both candidates are this disliked.
Oh, man. What a great way to end Touche.
Hooray. Hey,
hooray. Tracy Seppel and Charles Lipson in studio with us tonight, filling in for Dave and Chris, who will be back next week. You guys, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
My
Justin.
Pleasure.